You think that Marcos may have had something to do with this?
He was quick enough to point the finger of suspicion. And was he not in charge of the party that took you prisoner on the far side of the island? What better opportunity to have retrieved the knife, or to know where such a weapon may be?
It gave the companions food for thought. If their enemy was the sect chief, then they would have to keep close counsel and watch one another with the utmost care. That depressing thought effectively killed all conversation, and each was lost in his or her own thoughts as they returned to felling trees. The work was hard, and there was a plentiful supply of water, but the humidity was such that they needed to drink a lot more than they brought with them, as J.B. discovered when he turned the empty canteen upside down.
Dark night. Nothing about this pest hole is good.
River there. Maybe fill canteen.
Elias, is it drinkable down there?
It may be a little brackish with this density of wood. The river gets blocked too frequently to flow fresh, but it will still be drinkable.
Better than nothing.
The armorer took the canteen and headed toward the river that ran parallel to the area being felled by the work parties. As he made his way through the trees, JB could hear the other lumbermen at work, but his attention wasn't on his surroundings. Spinning around his head were thoughts that he didn't want to consider. If they managed to get off this island in one piece, without either being chilled by separatists or lynched by those who felt the companions were responsible for the earlier murder, then it seemed possible that Mildred may part company with them. Although there was a part of the armorer that could understand Mildred's dilemma, he couldn't deal with the thought of traveling on without her. He wasn't a man for expressing his tender emotions, but he had always assumed that their feelings for each other ran deep. Perhaps he was wrong. He had reached the bank of the river, really little more than a stream, but still fairly deep, which ran sluggishly. He bent to scoop up a palmful of water to taste it and appease the dryness in his throat. He grimaced as it hit his taste buds. It was sour and brackish, tainted by the leaves and twigs. But it wasn't poisonous, and better than nothing. JB uncorked the canteen and dipped it into the flowing stream.
Oh, hell.
The fact that he'd been so preoccupied angered him. He couldn't believe that he'd been that stoop so soon after they had been under threat. He had to have been simple to track, and he was relieved that whoever followed had been careless enough to give him unintentional warning. A single shot caught him as he entered the water, what felt like a burning needle shooting through his upper thigh. It felt like a graze. He had to have made the water in time to prevent a better shot. It still hurt like hell, though, the residual impact and the shock making him turn in the water. Somehow, his glasses stayed on as he submerged, although his battered fedora floated past his eyes as he rolled over. He felt his backside and legs hit the muddy bottom of the riverbed. He kicked, churning up silt as he freed himself from the mud's grip. He reached out and grabbed his hat and pulled it down to him. The dirt in the water stung his eyes, and he could only see light reflected against the opaque surface of the river. If he couldn't see out past the scum and detritus on the surface, then it was a fair bet to assume that whoever was after him couldn't see in past the same. So unless they wanted to take another random shot, he was safe for the time being. But not for long. His descent had been too swift for him to do anything other than take a fast breath, and his lungs were straining. Another breath was becoming imperative. He spasmed and coughed, bubbles of carbon dioxide exploding from his nostrils and heading for the surface, giving away his position. He ignored the pain in his leg and the dark stream of blood that colored the water around him, another clear marker for his adversary. If he was going to break surface soon, he needed to move downriver. Following the flow of the river, he turned and kicked, propelling himself downstream until he had no choice but to surface and gasp more air into his lungs. He hoped that the others had heard the report of the Glock and would have headed to the riverbank to investigate. They might not catch whoever had fired, but at least they would scare him away, giving JB a chance to escape the river in safety. He could hear the blood pounding in his ears and see black stars exploding in front of his eyes as he stroked, trying to keep low in the water. It was no good. He would have to surface now, before it was too late and he passed out, expelling carbon dioxide and taking in the brackish water instead of fresh air. He hungrily sucked in air as his lungs shot through with the agonizing relief. He couldn't tell how far downstream he had traveled, and right then he didn't care. He could breathe again, and that was all that mattered. Spluttering brackish water running from his nose, JB set his feet lightly on the bed of the river. It was chest deep at that point, and it buoyed him enough to prevent his heavy boots becoming bogged down in the mud. His ears popped as water ran from them, the sound now piercing and painfully clear and bright.
JB! Fireblast Man! Are you okay?
Ryan was running along the riverbank, leaping over the foliage and twisted tree roots that sprung out into the water in his attempt to reach the armorer. Christy was close behind, her hair flailing free behind her, suggesting that the moment of real danger was past. Farther along the bank, back where he dove into the river, JB could see Dean and Doc holding down a struggling man, while the giant Elias and Jack stood guard, holding off a small cabal of woodcutters who were clustered around. JB, still clutching his fedora, struck out for the bank, hauling himself up with the help of the one-eyed man's outstretched hand. As his right leg hit the bank, no longer supported by the water's buoyancy, he felt pain sear through the muscle, and the leg buckled beneath him.
Oh, fuck, that stings! I figured the bastard caught me as I hit the water. My own fault. Should have heard him coming before, but...
It doesn't matter. You need to get that dressed as soon as possible. We'll have to get back to the vill.
If we can, they might have other ideas.
Men gathered around the companions and the prone attacker. As Ryan and JB approached, they could hear Elias trying to reason with the crowd.
You are not deaf. You heard the shot for yourselves. And now one of the pale ones is missing. Well, we find this man with a blaster in his hands.
Where is this missing man?
Over here. And that bastard shot was good enough to hurt like hell.
Jack and Elias turned to see the armorer hobble back toward them with the help of Ryan and Christy. A brief smile flickered across the albino's face. It was soon erased by the words of the crowd.
They killed one of ours. Why shouldn't they pay?
You heard me say that I was with them when that murder occurred. Do you still not believe me? Truly, your heads are thicker than the trees you cut.
John Barrymore, it is a relief to see you. I feared that perhaps we had lost you.
Just keeping my head down, Doc.
I don't want to spoil the moment, but I figure we better get JB's leg looked at as soon as possible. We need to get back to the vill and take the bastard who shot JB with us.
Why should we help you? One of our people is chilled by a weapon of yours, and our village is under the influence of one who allows herself to be defiled by you. It is a pity that he did not drown.
Ryan felt JB stiffen at this reference to Mildred and him, and stayed his friend with a grip on the armorer's shoulder.
Easy, JB. Don't let him row you.
Is that all you can think of when we are at a crucial moment in the history of our people? You should be left here to rot when the rest of us move on.
Elias turned and took the Glock from where it lay on the ground, then swung around to face the group in front of him.
I will carry this blaster, so you cannot protest about the weapon being in the hands of the Pale Ones. We will leave now and head back to the vill. You, on the ground, you will come with us, and if you try to escape, I will blast you myself. Trying to shoot a man in the back. Come, let us go.
As Elias leveled the blaster at them, the crowd of disgruntled Pilatans moved back to allow the companions and their captive to pass through. Dean had the Pilatan captive's arm up behind him in a hammerlock, with Doc at his side, one of Jack's knives in the older man's grasp, poised at the captive's ribs if necessary. Jack led the way, and behind Dean, Doc, and the captive came JB, supported by Ryan and Christy. The armorer gritted his teeth and tried to put as much weight as possible on his leg. There was some way to go before they reached the vill. The wound, which stretched from his thigh up to his hip, was still bleeding, and he could feel his leg starting to stiffen. It wasn't deep, but this was partly why the wound refused to stop bleeding, despite the effort Christy had made to pack it to staunch the flow. Elias covered them, walking backward, until they rounded a bend in the path and it was no longer possible to see the Pilatans gathered by the riverbank. The giant turned so that he could walk more easily, but still kept vigilant for attack from the rear or the sides.
I do not need to tell you, I know, but keep your ears open, Jack. I don't think we can trust them.
Phew, already there.
This shit is really going to hit the wall now. What the fuck will Marcos and Mildred make of this one?